Monday, and welcome to today's episode of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. A quick reminder, Pecan Day has been moved to April 6th at Yuba City, California. The California Walnut Conference will be April 7th and April 8th at Yuba City, and the North Valley Nut Conference will be on June 8th in Orland, California. Taylor Chalstrom will get the show started with a My Ag Life and Almonds report right after this. The Musco Family Olive Company is leading the transformation of the table olive industry. We are committed to the California olive grower and invite you to grow with our family. Modern table olive orchards apply newly perfected state-of-the-art planting and harvesting to one of the world's oldest tree crops for proven superior results. There is opportunity in any crop transition, and Musco is proud to offer long-term contracts and free trees to our grower partners. Visit us at the Agro Malora booth at the upcoming Calusa Farm Show and the World Ag Expo. See you there.
Until 2016, when UC Davis plant pathologists David Rizzo and Bob Johnson identified a species of the Ganoderma fungus, previously unreported in the state, but rot in almonds was considered a problem of older orchards. Since then, the newcomer Ganoderma aspersum has been found infecting orchards as young as 4 years old and has been responsible for a number of growers removing younger orchards because of extensive tree loss. While reports of the issue alarmed farm advisors last year and in years prior, UCCE farm advisor Phoebe Gordon said that it has affected a small number of orchards and that the sky is not falling just yet. However, growers should keep their eyes open.
If you see, tree fall, especially in orchards that are younger than you'd expect, so when trees are, or your orchard is probably within, anything less than 20 years old and you're getting a lot of fallen trees, maybe reach out and contact your farm advisor. But in general, this isn't something that I think that most people should be, worried about when they're planting a new almond orchard.
In an Almond Day presentation, Gordon gave a bit of a background on wood decay fungi, such as butt rot. Wood decay is a common occurrence in trees, and the ones that we care about are pathogenic. Some need wounds to attack trees.
They will work by breaking down lignin and cellulose in wood. And so why we care about them is because what happens is the trees become so weakened that they can't really withstand any forces. And so typically they fall during shaking or during winter storms after the ground's a little bit wet. And so in general, trees can prevent wood decay fungi from moving further into a tree. It's called, then they create something that's called reaction wood. So there are other wood attacking fungi, some that act as decay fungi. So like silver leaf in almonds, that's pretty rare. I've only seen one farm call related to that. Phomopsis is a pretty common pathogen in prune orchards, and that is a wood decay fungi. Sometimes it's commonly found in almond. Oxyporus is another wood decay fungi. That's something you probably are more likely to see when the trees are reaching the end of their lifespan. Armillaria is a classic, fungus that attacks wood and can kill trees. It doesn't cause trees to fall over, though. They die standing up. And so, silver leaf, I guess going back, you can see silvering of the leaf, cut the tree in half. You see this discoloration in the wood here. Phomopsis, you also see discoloration in the wood. Oxyporus, you can see, white growth on the outside of the trees, and armillaria. If you cut into the bark, you'll see this white growth underneath the bark, and that's a pretty good indication of armillaria.
Ganoderma aspersum appears to be more aggressive than its counterpart, Ganoderma brownii, a related fungus endemic to California that tends to infect older orchards on the downhill side, according to David Rizzo and Bob Johnson. In California, Ganoderma aspersum appears to have displaced Ganoderma brownii, now accounting for more than 90% of all samples of butt rot in almonds. As for how it affects orchards of different ages,
it's been found to affect orchards ranging from 4 to 24 years of age, but the average age of affected orchards is 14. Not all the orchards that have had Ganoderma aspersum identified have had really severe infections where there's so many trees that fall that the grower just ends up replanting the entire orchard. So Infections have been found to extend below the soil line in a pattern that suggests that infection point is below the ground. So infections will spread into the roots as well as into the trunk. And so some work that the RISA lab has done looking at how severe and how much wood is infected by Ganoderma dispersum shows that fallen trees have no healthy roots. Trees that are still standing but have evidence of infection that you can actually tell have a couple. And then, trees that are asymptomatic may or may not be infected by Ganoderma dispersum. And I'll say that's in orchards that they know that they have Ganoderma dispersum. And some orchard managers that, participate in these surveys have reported that trees that were infected by Ganoderma dispersum do decline in performance before falling over. So Ganoderma brownii, the native Ganoderma has been identified in different areas of the Central Valley. The Ganoderma dispersum has only been found in the five southernmost Central Valley counties. So that's Kern, Tulare, Kings, Fresno, and Madera.
Gordon also gave a couple of tips for infield identification of Ganoderma butt rot.
What I always do when I'm investigating a tree that's fallen over to see if it's been affected by wood rot fungi is I'll actually, grab or, try to touch the wood that's at the base of the tree and see how it, and so wood that's been affected by wood rot fungi is sometimes really spongy or porous. And it kind of feels like styrofoam is probably the easiest way to describe it. And if you grab healthy wood, it just feels like a piece of wood. It doesn't have any give to it. I've also seen conchs. That's the fruiting body of Ganoderma dispersum. And so it's when it's younger, it's whitish tissue. And so aside from a fallen tree, those are the best identification methods that we have. There are other types of wood rot fungi that will create conchs on trees. So just because you see something doesn't necessarily mean that you have Ganoderma dispersum. So again, it's been found in a very small number of orchards so far. Usually conchs are within a foot or so of the soil, but I have seen conchs emerging from the tree crotch.
Gordon said, based on the information that the RITSO lab knows up to this point, it might be wise to stay away from replanting with Nemigard, and that's just a guess based on the tiny amount of information that they know. The rootstock has been popular in the southern San Joaquin Valley because it is one of the least decayable, but Nemigard has thin bark, likely increasing its woundability and providing entryways for Ganoderma dispersum.
Another thing to note is that a large number of the trees that have been found to be infected have crown gall infections, but we don't know if that's a causative type association or if it's just a correlation. We do know that individual conchs will release a ton of spores into the soil. So you might be wondering how it is that infections can be below ground, but the conchs release spores above ground. It's thought that irrigation might push those spores deeper into the soil, and sampling that the RISA lab has done has shown spores to be found 2 feet below the soil, and they didn't look any deeper than that. They think that infections happen by spores, and so that's the product of sexual reproduction. And the reason why they think that is because they've isolated Ganoderma individuals from different trees and found that they are genetically distinct individuals. And so if you think back to like high school biology, sexual reproduction, the genes are exchanged. And so you have gametes with distinctive genetic profiles. And so, asexual reproduction would happen by, mycelial movement. And so that would be the same individual affecting multiple trees. The infections happen below ground. It's thought that shakers cause damage that allow spores to start invading plant tissues. I guess we're not entirely sure why Nemigard seems to be the only affected rootstock. It's thought that it's not an issue of the wood being more susceptible to infection or easily broken down. They did some lab tests with different rootstock and found that Nemigard was actually breaking down at a slower rate than some of the other almond rootstocks. But the bark is thin and roots break easily with Nemigard, so it's possible that it could just be an issue that Nemigard is damaged more easily than some of our other rootstocks and is more prone to infection in the field. And infections don't progress within an orchard at the same rate. It's probably because, you know, you have all these distinct or individually different individuals infecting each tree. And so if you think about, you know, you have a population, you know, some in this population are going to be better at something than others. And so, you know, you could have some individuals that just break down wood at faster rates than others. And so when you have orchards that are affected by Ganoderma, you'll just, at the beginning, you'll have a couple of trees fall. And then the next year you'll have more trees fall. And then, you know, you'll keep on progressively having more trees fall in the really severe cases. And again, not all orchards are affected really severely. It's thought that, again, we just don't know for sure. You know, I know Daisy Hernandez is actively doing research on spore movements, but it's thought that spores can spread throughout an orchard by dust from harvest, possibly, either to different parts of your orchard and to nearby orchards. But again, you know, this is just, I don't know if they've confirmed that yet.
Gordon again reiterated that there's still a lot that Extension does not know about this issue.
I think spores might be released a lot, but we don't know when that overlap between when infections occur and when spore release happens. You know, it's unknown if, you know, the infection happens at harvest or maybe during winter sanitation. We don't know if crown gall makes trees more susceptible to infection or perhaps provides an infection point. It's unknown if fumigations will kill spores or how long spores will survive in the soil. So it's very possible that when you have a replant situation and you fumigate and do everything that you need to do, that it's going to be fine. But again, we don't know that.
As for what a grower can do if they suspect that Ganoderma dispersum is infecting their orchard, Gordon said it's likely that they don't have to worry if they're not in Madera County or southward at the moment. If they do have an infected orchard, farm advisors are always here to help, as well as the USDA Farm Service Agency. Some questions that are still yet to be answered are whether hand-pulling young trees are beneficial to protecting them against Ganoderma dispersum, whether to avoid Nemagard at this point, and whether to break off conchs when you see them on the trees.
As for how to try to avoid infections from happening in the first place, we only have speculation. I know Bob Johnson has suggested that you hand pull young trees in the hopes that you're not going to damage them when they're young and cause an infection. I know that's expensive and then that may not end up being a actual viable option. But again, you know, we don't have a lot of information at this point. But the thought is that, you know, the plants are going to be, you know, by the time you might start doing an actual machine shaking, the trees will be older and stronger, and the trunk diameter is going to be larger. And so if you have a fungus that attacks a tree and has a certain growth rate, it could be that the tree can just, you know, outgrow it if they're older, you know, because it's going to take longer for the fungus to eat up enough of the wood to cause the tree to fall over. But again, this is expensive and really may not be feasible, especially with current labor prices. I wouldn't necessarily suggest avoiding Nemagard, even in areas that are affected, just because, you know, it is still a really important rootstock to the almond industry. And even in the areas that have been infected, or affected, I should say, it's a very small number of orchards. And I would say, though, if you do have an orchard that you pulled out due to Ganoderma dispersum, it might be a good idea to choose a different rootstock on replants. And, you know, we have a lot of rootstocks that provide the same sort of nematode protection that Nemagard does. As for going through and breaking off conchs to try to eliminate spore production, by the time you see the conchs, you know, the fungus has already infected the plant. It's grown through and it's reproducing. And so, you know, that infection has already occurred, and all the infections that have probably happened in your orchard have probably occurred. In the orchard that I've seen that was really severely affected by Ganoderma dispersum, there's probably too many to really make this a viable option anyways to maybe prevent it from spreading to a different area of your orchard or to a neighboring orchard. You know, when I walked through, it was almost every single tree that had these conchs, and you're also hoping that you find everything and that the trees don't continue to form more, or they should say the fungus doesn't continue to form more. So I don't know if that's necessarily an effective option. So we don't have any control options right now, to be blunt.
Another question Extension has gotten is whether Ganoderma dispersum can survive in wood pieces buried in the soil from whole orchard recycling. There is evidence that this is possible, and the Rizzo lab did some research on this.
They took wood that was infected by Ganoderma dispersum, they buried it in the soil, and they took pieces of it at certain points in time to see if they could re-isolate Ganoderma dispersum from these pieces of wood. And so they found that after 7 months, wood that was between 2 and 3.5 cubic inches, they weren't able to isolate anything. And after 16 months, it was not viable in anything smaller than 28 cubic inches. So if you're recycling an orchard, you are, you're not going to immediately, spread the wood chips, incorporate them, and replant. There's a lot of other processes that have to go on. And especially since, one pass through with a tiller probably isn't going to incorporate all the chips. It just takes time for replanting an orchard. So it's, we think that you're probably not going to have to worry about Ganoderma left in the wood chips when replanting. But I will say it is technically a risk. But I would say it, for everything we know at this point, it might be a low risk. But again, this might change as we understand more about this pathogen. And so currently, when we recommend that you replant when doing whole orchard recycling, you grind your wood chips small enough to pass through a 2-inch screen. And the pathogen will likely be, so we think that it's not going to be remaining in those wood chips. I also want to note that we do think that it's spores that are a concern, not the wood chips or the Ganoderma dispersum might be left in wood chips. But unfortunately, we just don't know if fumigation will kill these spores, and we also don't know how long these spores will remain alive in the soil.
Regional and national agricultural news right after this.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
The Department of Water Resources has announced hydropower generation has resumed at the Hyatt Power Plant at Oroville Dam in Butte County. The power plant was taken offline August 5th due to historic low lake levels driven by the state's ongoing severe drought conditions. Recent storms have boosted lake levels and provided colder water in the reservoir to allow operations to resume. Currently, the power plant is utilizing one generating unit to produce electricity and supply it to the state's electrical grid managed by the California Independent System Operator. Outflows from the plant and generation will initially remain low due to reduced agricultural demands and improved delta salinity conditions. DWR anticipates an average outflow of about 900 cubic feet per second, which will generate approximately 30 megawatts of power. As lake levels rise and demand increases, additional units will be brought back online. DWR completed major maintenance activities while the power plant was offline to ensure the plant maintains its reliability and is available for water deliveries and power generation. DWR continues to manage Lake Oroville and to balance storage needs with requirements for delta outflows, water quality, and public health and safety requirements in an effort to conserve as much storage as possible in the event of another dry year. Part two of this series from organicproduce.com as we check in with where we're at with the organic industry. We start off on a citrus side of things. December rains throughout California impacted the growers' ability to pick organic citrus and for the citrus to mature to the ideal ripeness. Disruption during the holidays also has growers playing catch-up to start off January, leading to less than ideal fill rates for the first 2 weeks of the new year. Organic navel oranges will be limited, while other varieties, organic mandarins and blood and caracara oranges, will have significant gaps in supply until harvest can catch up mid-month. The good news is that the crop is not much damaged as delayed, and there will be a peak season for California organic citrus ramping up again for mid-January and beyond. Organic salads could be in for a bumpy ride as cool temperatures out west, particularly at night, have slow growth and growers have been cutting product 10 days ahead of normal. Occasional prorates or out of stocks can be expected for early January. And speaking of freight rates, the cost per case to bring fresh produce from the growing regions to the marketplace continues to skyrocket. Between Christmas and New Year's, many over-the-road truck drivers took the week off for the holidays. Additionally, poor weather across the Cascades, Sierras, and Rockies delayed truck availability on top of an already tight truck market across the country. The most difficult regions to find carriers to get product filled have been South Texas, Florida, and Washington. There have been quotes of $4,000 to $5,000 higher than usual per load from these regions recently, which is driving up the cost of produce for consumers. According to FruitGrowersNews.com, the World Ag Expo will be back in action February 8th through the 10th in Tulare, California. Show officials note confidence in the event, with 94% of spaces sold as of January 3rd and domestic and international ticket sales trending at 2020 levels. More than 95 special events, seminars, and demonstrations are scheduled for the three-day show. Highlights will include livestock demonstrations, as well as a prayer breakfast, ag leadership breakfast, and a Toyota Tundra giveaway drawing, and more. Outdoor experiences have been in high demand, with exhibitors to demonstrate new products and provide upgraded interactions with attendees, so ride and drives will continue. Demo spaces have been added as well, and seminars will be hosted by Fresno State, Women in Ag for Mentoring and Empowerment, the FBI, and a variety of exhibitors. Tracks will cover dairy and livestock demonstrations, orchard and vineyard management, professional development, and more. The World Ag Expo is focused on keeping all guests safe and will be following state COVID requirements. For more information, log on to worldagexpo.com. U.S. Department of Agriculture meteorologist Brad Rippey discusses month-over-month changes in the D3 and D4 categories of drought coverage for the month ending January 4th.
During the five-week period ending January 4th, 2022, U.S. drought coverage was generally steady. We saw drought coverage at about 55.5% of the country back in early December. The current value is 54.8%. The one thing that really did change a little bit more remarkably is that we have seen a significant decrease in the coverage of the highest levels of drought. So for example, your exceptional drought coverage, your D4, decreased during the month of December from a little over 5% at the beginning of the month to just 1.5% by January 4th. If you look a little further back, our D4 coverage peaked back during the summer and late spring. A little over 10% of the country was in D4 at that time. And that, of course, has shrunk to the current value of 1.5%. So those high-end drought levels have decreased markedly in some parts of the country, particularly the north and the west.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey. The latest food price index declined 1.2 points in December, but remained 23% higher than a year ago. The index from the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations averaged 133.7 points in December. Except for dairy, the values of all sub-indices registered monthly declines. For 2021 as a whole, the index averaged 125.7 points, as much as 28.1% above year-ago levels, with all sub-indices averaging sharply higher than the previous year. The American Farm Bureau Federation says it's time for the White House to engage on trade after a year that saw little progress on new trade deals. From China to the UK and EU to Kenya, Farm Bureau Trade Advisor Dave Samuelson says there's much to do to bring down barriers to U.S. farm goods.
There's a lot that could be done moving towards future agreements with China. We want the U.S. this administration to start to engage more in the Asia-Pacific region. One of those ways it'd be through rejoining the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or has been renamed the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership.
There's also the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership that took effect January 1st and includes China, Japan, Australia, and other Asian countries, but not the United States.
The U.S. needs to engage. And of course, there's potential, you know, there's the negotiations that were started with the United Kingdom, with Kenya. And of course, there's always room for more discussion and try to better reduce trade barriers with the European Union.
Asked about the first year Biden emphasis on domestic versus trade issues, Samuelson says the administration can do both.
doing the domestic focus and also work on the international issues. It's always been said that when foreign leaders come to the White House, they're always there to talk about trade issues.
Key, he says, for the overall U.S. economy and agriculture. Samuelson concludes, as much as an administration wants to set out its own agenda, the world continues.
A group of environmental organizations is asking a federal court to lift a stay and expedite their lawsuit, demanding that the Environmental Protection Agency vacate its 2020 dicamba registrations of Eugenia, Tavium, and Extendimax. The group, led by the Center for Food Safety and Center for Biological Diversity, filed a motion in the U.S. District Court of Arizona, armed with a new EPA report detailing continued widespread alleged dicamba damage in 2021. In July of 2021, a district court judge had granted a motion to stay the group's lawsuit while the legal system worked out questions of jurisdiction in a D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, where a handful of dicamba-focused lawsuits had been consolidated. But now the environmental group plaintiffs are demanding that the district court lift the stay and review the case on an expedited timeline based on EPA's own testimony of continued off-target dicamba damage. A Chinese national and former employee of Monsanto Company and the Climate Corporation pled guilty to committing economic espionage, according to the Department of Justice, after he was caught stealing trade secrets from Monsanto to benefit the People's Republic of China. The former employee was a researcher for both companies. He entered into a plea agreement last week in federal court. He was formally indicted in November of 2019 by a grand jury in the U.S. District Court for the District of Eastern Missouri, more than 2 years after he was arrested for trying to leave the United States for China in June of 2017. He was caught boarding a plane with trade secret technology copied onto a micro SD card. A grand jury indicted him on 3 counts of economic espionage and conspiracy to commit economic espionage, 3 counts of trade secret theft, and 1 count of conspiracy to steal trade secrets. The economic espionage charges can carry up to 15 years in prison for each count, and a trade secret charges can carry up to 10 years in prison. According to court documents, he was employed by Monsanto and its subsidiary, the Climate Corporation, from 2008 to 2017, where he worked as an imaging scientist. The company has developed a digital online farming software platform that was used by farmers to collect, store, and visualize critical agricultural field data and increase and improve agricultural productivity. A critical component to the platform was a proprietary algorithm referred to as a nutrient optimizer. The companies considered the nutrient optimizer to be a valuable trade secret and their intellectual property. The digital tool is sold both in the U.S. and internationally. In June of 2017, the day after resigning from the companies, he attempted to travel to China on a one-way airplane ticket, according to the Department of Justice. While waiting to board the flight, federal officials conducted a search of his person and baggage and later determined one of his electronic devices contained copies of the nutrient optimizer. He continued on to China, where he worked for the Chinese Academy of Sciences Institute of Soil Science. He was arrested upon his return to the United States. He is scheduled to be sentenced on April 7th. And according to the indictment, at some point he began sending information about his work to the people in China. In what might have been his undoing, the indictment also states that he conducted some Google searches on a Monsanto computer looking for information on ways to avoid intellectual property theft being used as evidence. More information on the My Ag Life Daily News Report right after this.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing. Learn more at walnuts.org.
Let your bees carry a beneficial biofungicide directly to flowers and reduce brown rot blossom blight and jacket rot. Sign up for a field trial of bee vectoring and the biofungicide Vectorite with CR7 on your almond orchard. Deadline is January 15th for setup and use at the start of your February bloom. Email contact at beevt.com. California farmers are reducing acreage on specialty crops to get by on water shortages, and they say food prices will have to increase. California almond and tomato farmer Stuart Wolf.
People start making adjustments for the lack of water and start pulling out acres and what have you. I think we got to see an uptick in pricing of any crops that are kind of unique to California. Think about processing tomatoes. This is the thing I always think about. We grow and process over 92% of the nation's processing tomatoes here in California. We have all these investments and facilities here. You don't just pick up and take it someplace else. You've got to reinvest in the facilities, the infrastructure. You got to have the trucks, you know. So something like processing tomatoes that are so heavily concentrated here in California, they have got to go up in value if growers are expected to cover all their costs on fewer acres that they're actually farming.
Wolf says often the price that growers get for producing tomatoes is below or near the production costs.
Yeah, no, it's tough in both farming and the processing. You know, I think ultimately consumers are going to have to pay more for their tomato products if the farmers here have got to cover all their costs on fewer acres.
That's California almond and tomato farmer Stuart Wolf.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That concludes the show for today. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. From all of us at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.